And now the future has to be a continuation of the present, where he is obeying God and walking in faith and trust with him. God is calling him out of a past of sin to a future where he is walking with the Lord. And you can see that same journey in us.
Are you looking for meaning or a word from God that's relevant to your life? Are you searching for a better understanding of who God is? Well, you're in the right place. You found the Gary Talks About God podcast. This is a weekly podcast that comes to you from the pulpit of Red Bank Missionary Baptist Church in Germantown, North Carolina. The podcast is hosted by Red Bank Senior Pastor Gary Sanders. Now let's get ready to take that walk through God's Word with our pastor, teacher, and friend. Hey, he's that guy we call Gary.
This week, as I was working on the sermon, I really struggled on how to start this. I couldn't decide between should I start with blame it all on my roots, I showed up in boots, or should I have went with he's gone country, look at them boots, he's gone country, back to his roots. The problem is I don't own boots. So apparently I can't return to my roots because I don't own the prerequisite boots to go back to where I came from. But this morning we are talking about returning to your roots. And if you were to return to your roots this morning, what does that mean to you? If you say, well, I'm going back to my roots. I know for Sandy that means driving up to West Virginia and all that encompasses, the good, the bad, and the joke. So, you know, everything that goes with that. You know, that's almost heaven. We'll have to analyze what that means later. You know, does it mean that you, in your mind, does that mean you pack up and you go somewhere? Some of you, your roots are right here. Your roots aren't too far. What would you go back to? You know, I thought about this in relationship to where we're living. I tried to decide, is us moving to Thomasville, was that really me going back to my roots? I know I spent a lot of time as a child growing up down there and spent most of my summers down there. And, you know, I don't know if that would have been back to my roots or not. In a way, it kind of feels like, you know, I am. But what does it mean, you know, if you were to go back to your roots? When we come to Genesis 31 this morning, it is really a story of Jacob returning to his roots, to where he grew up. If you remember, we are in the middle of the Jacob narratives, and he's been out of the land, away from his family, and away from the promise that God made him earlier, that he would be served by Esau, his brother, and he has abandoned all that, and he's lived far away over in Mesopotamia with Laban for 20-some years. He's been in this foreign culture. And he left not because God had called him to go preach to people. He left because of his sin and his deceitfulness and an acute desire for self-preservation when his brother swore that he would kill him. And so his leaving of his roots was not done because of a happy following God, doing what God leads me to do type situation. Right, it's really kind of the opposite of Abraham. Abraham left his roots following and obeying God. Jacob left his roots in the promised land and the promises for self-preservation, not to die, and because of his sin. And now here we are 20 years later of grueling hard work, of ending up not with one, but two wives, 12 kids, 11 boys, one girl. Remember, Benjamin hasn't been born yet. Laboring only to watch Laban's flocks increase and his prosperity increase. So here has Jacob been for 20 years. And the beginning of chapter 31, verse 1, we find out that God is going to appear to him. And it says, "Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, 'Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all his wealth.' And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before." Then verse 3, "The Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you.'" Right there in verse 3 is that call for Jacob to return to his roots. What we find, though, in Jacob's return, although it is a physical return, it is much more of a spiritual return. He is returning not only to his roots, to his family, to his land, but to the roots of his faith and to his roots to God, who called him and said, "Through you, I am going to bless all nations. Through you, you will carry on the covenant promises." He is returning, yes, to his roots, but more so, he is returning to the Lord. So as he returns to the Lord, what we find out and what we can see even in our return, if we walk away, is that it involves all aspects of our lives as it relates to time. It involves our past, our present, and our future. And so this morning, to return to the Lord, or returning to the Lord, means you have to forsake your past. It means forsaking your past. And you see that in verses 1 through 21. It is this situation that God calls Jacob to return, to leave Laban and return to the land of promise. And God institutes that, right? He says to Jacob, "Return to the land, return to me. I will be with you. Return to me. Leave what has been going on for the past 20 years and return to me." And God encourages him a little bit with that, "I will be with you," because Jacob knows two things, right? Jacob knows that when he leaves, Laban is not going to be happy and pursue him. And Jacob knows from the other end, Esau is not going to be happy to see him. And will he go through on his threat to kill him? So for Jacob to forsake his past and to go towards his future, he's going to need some encouragement that the Lord gives him, where he says, "I will be with you." So this call there to forsake his past is there. And before he leaves, he says in verse 4, he sends and calls Rachel and Leah into the field where his flocks was and said to them. And he's going to outline everything that has gone on. And this is the recount. "I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, 'The spotted shall be your wages,' then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, 'The striped shall be your wages,' then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and the flocks and given them to me. In the breeding season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream that the goats that mated with the flocks were striped, spotted, and molted. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, 'Jacob,' and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Lift up your eyes and see all the goats that mate with the flocks are striped, spotted, and molted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now arise, go from this land and return to the land of your kindred.'" And so Jacob is saying, this is what's been going on. And he's been in this battle but with Laban for 20 years. And through the battle, God has been prospering and God has been looking out over him, even though, remember, he walked away from God. He walked away from the promises. Even in that context, God is still watching over him. And God is the one that has brought him the increase in his flocks. Remember that weird, strange stick thing that we said, yeah, it's got to be from God. And here it is, Jacob saying, "God told me exactly what to do. He's not forgotten me." So he looks at his wives and say, "All right, what do you think?" Because for them to walk away from their past means that they've got to walk away from their land and their kindred. They have to leave their father. It's going to be tough for them to walk away from what they've been going through. And so Rachel and Leah answered them in verse 14, says, "Is there any portion or inheritance left for us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has indeed devoured our money. All the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do." They have no desire to stay there. They understand what's going on. They don't want to be manipulated or the treatment by Laban that they've received. They don't want to stay there any more than they have to. I mean, look at the pain in their response. You know, he sold us. Our own dad sold us. And then took our money. See, some of the money when they were, their dowry would have been given back to them. And they're saying, he took everything that was ours. There's no reason for us to stay. And so with this, they decide that they're going to leave. Jacob gets up and he takes his sons, wives, camels, and he drives them away. And they're heading back. And it says that they did this in verse 19 when Laban had gone to shear his sheep. And said, and Rachel stole her father's household gods, and Jacob tricked Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he intended to flee. And that those are some interesting verses right there, verse 19 and 20, because even in this we see a little bit of that deceptive heart in Jacob still. He tricked his father-in-law. He didn't come out and be upright. He's like, okay, I'm just kind of sneak away. But what we see here in those verses is that the word for Rachel stole and the word for Jacob tricked are the same word, actually. The only difference is the first time it is being used by its literal definition, the second time it is being used more figuratively. So Rachel comes and steals her father's idols while Jacob stole away his heart. And you kind of see that Rachel and Jacob were kind of made for each other. Had a little bit of deception in there. Well, I mean, Rachel married the deceiver, and her dad was even better at that than Jacob was, and so she may have come by it a little bit naturally. But she does something in verse 19. It says that she stole her father's household goods. And we don't really know why she did this, but I think if we think about it for a minute, we know why. It was just pure spite. I really think so. She's taken his gods because she doesn't want to leave him with anything that may even remotely possibly bring him any prosperity in the future. And so she takes the gods. You're not going to be able to claim that this is bringing you prosperity. Nothing. You're on your own. I'm going to take them. I don't think she's taking them to worship. I think she's just taking them as dad, this is why you treated me. I'm going to do this to you. And so with that, the three of them and all his family leave. But you see Jacob in leaving that he is starting to make a break, and he's got a break from his deceitful ways. He is not going to be able to carry that into the promised land with him and live under God's blessing and provision. He cannot return to the Lord and continue to be Jacob the deceiver or Jacob the trickster. He can't leave and follow and return to the Lord at the same time operating under his own strength and his own abilities and being opportunistic at every moment to increase his wealth and his flocks and steal things that don't belong to him. He can't leave his past and walk towards the Lord but then carry his past with him and be the same person. You know, there are times in all of our lives when we act just like Jacob did. We walk away from the Lord. You know, you go back and reread why Jacob left. It was all because of his doing. He steals his brother's birthright. He steals his brother's blessing. He lies to his dad. He leaves because his past was one of deception and sin. And now God is calling him to return after 20 years of being disciplined. He cannot walk back to the Lord and be that same person. And the same is true for us. On those times when we walk away from the Lord, we can't decide, hey, we're going to return to the Lord and walk to him with that same sinfulness and deceit in our bodies as we did when we walked away from him. It doesn't work. You're not walking back to the Lord if you walk back in the same sin. There's got to be a break from that sin. There's got to be a break from that past, from what you have done, to walk back to the Lord and say, God, I'm sorry that I've done that. I'm returning to you. So when you return to the Lord, you've got to break. You've got to forsake your past. But then when you return to the Lord, you've got to confront your present. Right? As he leaves, there's going to be some things that happen immediately that he's going to have to confront. Namely, Laban. His present confrontation has a name. Sometimes yours may or may not, but his does. And his is a very real Laban who is going to come after him. And we see that in verse 24. verse 22, when it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob fled, he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him for 7 days and followed close after him into the hill country. He is in hot pursuit, if you will. He is going after Jacob. And he is going after Jacob with the intent of taking Jacob, his wives, his children, and bringing them back to the land. Back to his home in Mesopotamia. Back so that Jacob can continue to work for him so that he can prosper. And he's about to catch up with Jacob when God, in verse 24, appears to him in a dream. And it says, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Now, that's an interesting command, is it not? Jacob or Laban can't say anything good or bad to Jacob. You would imagine it would be, don't say anything bad to him, right? You cannot go and attack him. You cannot curse him. You cannot accuse him of all this stuff. You can't threaten him. You would imagine God saying, all right, you can't say anything bad about him. We understand that, but why can he not say anything good? Well, the simple reason, I believe, is because there is nothing that Laban can say. There is nothing that God wants Laban to say to in essence, look like he is blessing Jacob so that the prosperity that God is about to bring in Jacob's life in the next couple years would be a result of Laban's blessing, because they took blessings very seriously. So God is saying, you can't even say anything good to him. You can't rebuke him or praise him. And so I'm like, okay, what kind of conversation do you have then? You know, you can't do any of those. And so that is the instruction that God has given Laban. And it says in verse 25, he overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tents in the hill country. And Laban, his kinsman, pitched his tents in the hill country of Gilead. Do you see all the military terms? Laban was not, this whole idea, he's pursued, he's followed closely, he's pitched tents. All of this has a very militaristic component to it, like these two nations going into battle and what's going to happen when they meet. And then Laban comes in verse 26 and speaks to Jacob. He says, what have you done that you have tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and trick me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with mirth and songs and tambourine and lyre? And why did you not permit me to kiss my sons and my daughters farewell? Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. And now you have gone away because you have longed greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? You read that. Do you just get to the end of those verses and go, really? I mean, do you not hear the fake outrage in there? I mean, do you see all the lies that are in there? You've tricked me. Jacob didn't drive away his daughters with the sword. Daughters were loading up the camels before Jacob was even ready to go. They didn't, you know, Laban wasn't going to send them away with songs and all this stuff. Laban had kept their money. Laban wasn't going to lavishly send them away. You've done all this foolishly. I could harm you. No, you can't. God said you're not going to touch him. And so Laban has all this fake outrage and all these lies and everything. And he gets to the end and we find out why he's really mad. But you took my household gods. He's not really mad that his daughters and his grandchildren are going. He's mad because Laban took his gods. Can you imagine, you know, if that was what upset your dad the most, if you left like that? He's not mad that I'm no longer there. He's just mad that his gods are gone. Jacob was probably prepared for many things to face his future, but he was not prepared for that last one. He said, I thought you would take your daughters from me by force, which everything that Laban has done is indicating that Jacob's thought was correct. But no one has taken your gods. You know, go look in the presence of our kinsmen. Point out what I had that is yours and take it. And then we're told this. Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. It's a little disheartening because Jacob said, whoever takes it will be put to death. And so now we have this confrontation. And so Laban goes and he starts going through the tents and pulling everything. And I understand the god was probably, it was small enough to fit in a saddlebag. It's going to be small. It may have been wood. It may have been metal. I mean, something small. And he's going through and he's looking. And I imagine that every time that Laban comes out of a tent empty-handed, Jacob just gets angrier and angrier as he watches him go through this. And he goes into Rachel's tent and looks through Rachel's tents and didn't find them. And it says, now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them in the camel's saddle and set on them. And Laban felt all about the tent but did not find them. And she said to her father, let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the way of women is upon me. So he searched but did not find the household gods. And here we again see an insight into Rachel's deceit as well, saying that I can't get up, and she's sitting on top of them. Now, we need to understand that in her saying this, what the people of Israel would hear when they are hearing this is that Laban's idols have now been defiled. These false gods have been completely defiled. For when a woman was in her way, as is recorded in Exodus, or excuse me, in Genesis in the New Old Testament, the woman was unclean, and anything that she touched would defile what she touched. And here, can you imagine, they're thinking, what kind of god is this that could be so easily defiled? Laban continues his search till Jacob finally says in verse 36, what is my offense? He says that he became angry and berated Laban. Laban kind of had it coming. What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? For you have felt through all my goods, and you have found, and what have you found of your household goods? And I love this. Here, this is a little bit of mockery. Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen that they may decide between us. Go get what you found, put it out here, and let everybody act as a witness. What have you found? Well, he didn't find anything. These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. While it was torn by wild beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of myself. For my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was by day, the heat consumed me, and by cold, and the cold by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. The God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been on my side. Surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction, the labor of my hands, and rebuked you last night. Jacob is rightfully mad. And he is upset, and he is laying out everything that he has undergone in the past 20 years. But as you read that and you see what is happening, you really see that Jacob has grown tremendously. And in this present confrontation with Laban, what he does is not relapse back to his deceitfulness. He doesn't relapse back to his cunning or trying to trick Laban. What does Jacob do? He calls on the Lord as a witness. So in this present confrontation and confronting Laban, he calls on God to act as his witness and saying, God has been there. God has seen my affliction. And as he begins to say this, we're thinking, all right, Jacob is making some progress. He's growing because in this present moment, he relies on God instead of himself. And we're excited. He's going forward. So Laban answers him and he says, these daughters are my daughters, the children of my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. Now you should stop right there and go, is that true? No, it's a lie. None of it is his. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have born? Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So Jacob took a stone and set it as a pillar, and Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jagar Sadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, this is a heap of witness between me and you. Therefore he named it Galeed and Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between you and me and when we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives beside my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." So Laban has been neatly boxed in. God told him he couldn't do anything. Jacob has boxed him in by the truth, because so far everything Jacob has said is truth. Everything Laban has said is lies. And Laban has been boxed into that. And he didn't like it, so he kind of doubles down at the beginning with more lies. And so this whole time, Jacob is looking better and better because he's using the truth finally. He's not lying anymore. So Laban comes to him and says, "Let's make a covenant." And one of the interesting things about this that we can't overlook is as they make this covenant, we're seeing that two distinct people groups are emerging. Laban has taken on the name. Did you notice that he's no longer Laban, but he's Laban the Aramean? Did you pick up on that little subtle hint? Because what we see now is in Jacob the nucleus of the nation that will later become Israel. And so Jacob, as the head of Israel, is entering into this covenant as a nation head with Laban the Aramean and his people. And so they come together and they have this covenant, and they make this covenant together so that they are not at war with each other. They put up that heap, and you know that's kind of the dividing line. And they do it in what has been called the Mizpah benediction. Now, I need to say in a little aside on this. This benediction has been used in Christmas cards, jewelry, and all kinds of Christian stuff. That while we're away, I hope that God watches over you and me while we're separated. And it sounds so nice, doesn't it? That's not what it means. When you read this, what this really means is Laban going, "I don't trust you. I don't like you. I know you don't like me. I know you don't trust me. So I hope that God watches over you in everything you do because I don't trust you." Now, do you want to send that on a Christmas card this year? It's one of those things that it sounds really good. Oh, we'll name our church Corinth Baptist Church. It's in the Bible. It sounds really good, but it's not. This is Laban and Jacob coming together saying, "I don't like you, I don't trust you, so God's going to have to mediate between us. Because I know while we're apart, you're going to be conniving and deceitful and cunning and trying to encroach and trying to take. So God watch over you, you lying, no good thing." That's what the benediction really is. But Jacob agrees. And as they come together to do this, Laban says in verse 51, "See this heap and the pillar, which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of their father judge between us." So Jacob swore by the fear, notice that is capitalized, of his father Isaac. So what happens here is, again, we're seeing the division of the two nations, Jacob who would become Israel, Laban the Aramean, and in this benediction, in this covenant, Laban is really calling on the gods that Abraham served before God called him, to the gods of Nahor, to the pagan deities. He's saying, "May the deities of their fathers watch over us." And to this, Jacob does not swear. Jacob does not enter the covenant under the false deities. Instead, he says, "the fear capitalized of his father Isaac." And while we don't think about it, that is Jacob assigning a name to God, the fear of Isaac. So Jacob is making this covenant by the one true and living God. And so in this present time, as Jacob is confronting Laban and confronting his present, he is acting as a person of faith. He repeatedly, over and over, turns to God, points out that God is the one who is leading him, that God is the one who is having him return, that God is the one that blessed him, that God is the one that has given him the promises. In the present moment, Instead of Jacob listening to himself or his mom, he is listening to God. In confronting his present, he understands that he has to listen and obey God. And the interesting thing about the present is always before us, is it not? We live in the present, which means that our acts of faith and our trust and obedience must take place continually in the present. And here is Jacob acting just that way. Instead of letting his sinful ways define his present, he is now letting his present be defined as one as faith and trust and obedience to God. So he's dealt with his present, dealt with his past, he's dealing with his present. Now he needs to understand that to return to the Lord means to embrace his future. And we see that in verse 54 and 55 at the end, where it says, Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. The chapter ends now with Jacob worshiping. He has made a sacrifice to the Lord, and he understands that his deliverance is entirely from the Lord. He understands that his future, everything that his future will be, is going to be from the Lord. He knows that God's hand is in this. Verse 54 ties the past to the future. Because in chapter 28, remember, Jacob said to God, if you will give me bread to eat, and here we have it, we see that Jacob has the bread to eat. God has fulfilled his physical desires, and now God is about to fulfill his spiritual desires in returning to the land. But the return and everything that happens, Jacob becoming a great nation, will not happen because of who Jacob is or what Jacob has done. It's going to happen. Jacob, who will become Israel later, and the nation that follows, comes from God. Jacob's future is one that needs to be embraced as one being led and being obedient to God. He's walked away from his past sins. He's confronted Laban in the moment in his present and said, in the present, I'm living daily now by faith in God and obedience to him. And now the future has to be a continuation of the present, where he is obeying God and walking in faith and trust with him. God is calling him out of a past of sin to a future where he is walking with the Lord. And you can see that same journey in us. That's how God operates with us as well. Calls us from our sins to walk with him not only in the present, but into the future as well, where a glorious future awaits. Jacob is walking to the future, and he's got to embrace the promises of the covenant coming down to him, that he is going to be the father of many nations. He's going to be the father of Israel. He's going to be the father of the great nation that God is going to work through. He's going to be the father of the blessings to all the nations. Jacob needs to understand that is his future. Those are his future blessings and promises. And embrace that. Just as we embrace our future blessings and promises of one day being with Christ and walking with him. So you see, in returning to your roots, returning to the Lord, it's all encompassing. It involves our past, our present, and our future. And as we do that, one of the things that I am just amazed about as you read this chapter, that it starts with God saying, return to me. That we serve a God who calls people to return to him, including those who have walked away. You find it over and over throughout the Bible, God saying to his people, to those who have disobeyed, to those who have not listened, to those who have sinned, who have lied, broke his law, over and over, he says, return to me, return to me, return to me. We serve a God who calls people to return to him and return to their roots in him. Just like he tells the church in Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. He says, return to your first love. Return to me. Genesis chapter 31, yes, it sets the stage for the history of Israel to come, but shows us very vividly that we serve a God who is a God who calls people to return to him.
You've been listening to the Gary Talks About God podcast. Are you looking for a church? Well, Red Bank Missionary Baptist Church is a community of believers who exist to glorify God and see transformed lives through the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can find us on the web at www.redbankmbc.com. Also, come visit us on Sunday at 8104 Red Bank Road in Germantown, North Carolina. Did you like this podcast? We put one out each and every week, so don't forget to subscribe. We hope this has been a blessing to you, and we thank you for listening.